Hey, this is James from SurvivalPunk.com.
And this is his trusty sidekick, Mike.
How you doing, Mike?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
Anything happened this week?
Well, let me think. Yes. Yes, it did. But we'll talk about that later.
You're not going to mention your car?
Oh, yeah, my car. My car decided to be a douchebag this week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it made me think that the battery had gone completely cattywampus on me.
Cattywampus.
Yeah, cattywampus.
Love that word.
Yeah, I love that word, too.
So did you find out what was wrong with it? Because I never heard back.
Yeah, I have no freaking idea. The battery on it just went completely dead for no reason. And, I mean, the first three or four times I tried to start it, I had to jump start it every dang time. I decided to test to see if it was the battery or something else going on in the car.
Right.
So I disconnected the, you know, leads from the battery, right. used jumper cables to hook them to my wife's truck's battery. And just started it up without starting her truck.
Yeah.
Things started up right then. So I'll be like, oh, great. The battery's gone dead. So I jump start the dang car.
Right.
Leave it running for like an hour and a half before we leave. Drive all the way into Wally World's Tire and Lube Express.
Right.
Where I'm about to get, you know, checked and possibly replaced. They tell me to park by the bay. I turn the car off. Decide, I just got to try this. Try turning the car back on. It started up like nothing.
Hmm.
Apparently, the 2.5 hours I spent with running the car charged the battery, finally. And I haven't had a bit of problem from it since.
You should have at least had them use a quick tester to test the battery.
Well, that's the thing. They used the quick tester on it like a week and a half earlier.
Right.
And it said it was fine. It said it was beautiful. But, you know, I haven't had any problems on it since. I decided if I was going to have any problems, if I had any other problems, I'd get it checked again.
Right.
But since then, I've actually bought a couple of things. We call it a roadside survival, if you want to. Okay. One of them is sitting over there charging currently. I think it's charged by now.
Your quick charger, yes.
Yeah, I bought a jump pack, which I always recommend. It really could have came in handy the other day.
I just bought one, a bigger unit. We had a sale at my store.
Mm-hmm.
It was a $69 model. We marked down to $15.
Wow, I wish I'd known that.
Yeah.
I would have driven to your store to get that.
Yeah.
That's insane, but other than that, I also got an emergency roadside kit that had jumper cables and, right, like a full first aid kit in it.
Yeah.
A bunch of things. I haven't actually had a chance to look at it, you know, through it good, but I figured it was a great thing to have in the car with me.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Now, let's see. What are we going to be talking about on the show this week? Looks like we're going to talk about you becoming debt-free and how you finally got some bitcoins off of eBay. Going to be talking about some opinion, true survivors, and why preppers like to garden. We got a nice little gadget coming up on our survival gadget of the week, the Silver Cloud Survival Shelter. Going to be talking about the contest coming up, the 14.1 in James's results, as well as the Tough Mudder 2014 competition. We're going to have my survival movie pick of the week. Going to go into our the second part of our ongoing series on Prepping 101. This week will be about savings. Going to be inviting yet another survival celebrity onto the show. And, well, let's just take it right away. Now, it's my understanding you are about to become debt-free, like, within the next little bit. Now, that's got to be a great feeling.
It is, and I get excited every time I think about it. So, the only debt that I have in my life is my car that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And as of right now, I owe $6,100 on it.
How long have you been paying on this thing so far?
Since the January 2010.
Wow. And here we are all the way into 2014, so 4 years. So about how long before you think you're going to have that thing paid off?
This month, I'm going to drop $5,000 on it.
Wow. What is that, like your whole
income tax return and my bonus check at work combined, and then because I kind of did a trick on the next paycheck comes out, it's going to have the bonus check on it. Mm-hmm. And I went into the system and changed my dependents to be 9. So no taxes will come out of that check. Just one check.
Is that a legal move?
Mildly.
Mildly legal?
But every assistant manager and co-manager does it. So, and no one's ever had issues. I'll just be taxed for it later. It'll come out, you know, at the year end of the taxes when I file next year.
Oh,
but for now, I'll have my whole paycheck untaxed, and I'll drop as much money as possible on the car.
Okay.
And then I'm going to try not to touch my savings account, which we'll talk about later on why you shouldn't do that. I'm going to try not to touch my emergency savings fund and just make one or two more payments, because after that, I should only have about a grand left on it.
Awesome. And that can be, that's like
two payments.
That's like two payments.
Yeah.
That kind of reminds me of when I paid off my house.
Kudos on that, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that was best darn feeling in the world, and our producer can attest to that. That was just a great monkey to get off your back.
Every time I think about it, I'm like, at least with my car payment being the only debt that I have, it was a form of slavery upon me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was like, oh, if I get fired from my job, I've got this $400 a month car note to pay.
Oh.
Plus insurance and everything else. Like, it was just stressful. It's like, because all my survival gear and stuff, like, I wouldn't really have a problem, like, couch surfing or being homeless or, you know, whatever.
But living without a car.
Well, not only living without a car, but having to make that car payment if I had to.
I know.
Without a car payment, the threat of being jobless goes down a lot.
It does take some stress off you.
Right.
At the very least, as long as your car is not a convertible, you've still got a roof over your head.
Right, right. And that'll move me that much closer to my goal of being a hippie pig farmer. After I don't have that $400 a month anymore, I'm going to throw that money towards buying my piece of land.
Now, are you going to be a hippie that farms pigs, or are you going to be a farmer farming hippie pigs? Because that I would love to see.
No, I'm going to grow pigs. I'm going to, like, bacon and hammy and sausage and poke chop.
You know, I thought people raised pigs. You're talking about growing them. You got pig seeds?
I do. Little bacon seeds.
Little bacon seeds.
Yeah, they're cute.
Oh, they sound delicious.
What was the other thing we had to talk about?
Your bitcoins and how you finally got those.
So, when I first got into Bitcoin,
we talked about this a few weeks ago on the pod.
We did. We talked about this a few weeks ago, and my preferred method of getting bitcoins is to use a website called localbitcoins.com. You find other people in your community that have bitcoins, they're willing to sell them to you. You hand them cash, they use their cell phone app, and they send you the bitcoins. It takes about 2 seconds. Favorite method. You meet people face to face. Life is good. I like that. After that, it would be the website Coinbase.com. You set up your bank account. It takes a couple weeks. And then you buy from them. I also bought some bitcoins from eBay. And they got there. And then you need a passphrase and stuff to unlock the paper wallet to import the bitcoins into your online Bitcoin wallet.
Don't ask me why, but I cannot stand the phrase paper wallet.
Yeah, so
it sounds too flimsy.
I bought these coins, I think January 24th was the purchase date on eBay. And what are you doing over there?
Oh, I was just readjusting our tablet. It looked like it was about to fall over. The flashlight it was leaning against was perched precariously on its edge.
So I bought these bitcoins in January.
Mm-hmm.
And I had them imported, I think, yesterday. March the 5th.
Right.
The guy got real flaky on me, and I was like, I messaged him, and I was like, hey, this passphrase isn't working. This Bitcoin wallet shows it has no money.
Oh, God.
So I got real annoyed. I was like, what's going on here? And, like, he flaked out and didn't answer for weeks. And then I just got pissed, and I was like, fine, you know, I'm going to have to report this to eBay as a, you know, the guy ripped me off.
As well you should.
Right. And then a couple days later, he was like, oh, you know, I had stuff going on. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. You know, I gave him negative feedback on eBay. I was like, don't do. He ripped me off. It was a scam. Don't work with this guy.
That's amazing how much effect a threat will sometimes have.
Yeah. He said he had, like, family emergencies or something. And I was like, look, dude, you sold it to me. This is too much of a hassle. I was like, you either need to just fix it now or you get stuck with negative money and you're not going to make any money. I mean, negative feedback saying don't deal with this guy. I wouldn't have bought from him had I seen negative.
No, exactly. Here.
Yeah.
No,
negative feedback.
Negative feedback is like, you know,
it's a death now.
Yeah, it really is on eBay.
Right. So finally, and there was another guy that he also did the same thing too. Like right after me, because he kind of got sent back forth. He sent me the wrong information. Then he was like, okay, you're the right person.
A lot of family emergencies going on with
some crap going on. Eventually, I got the passphrase, which, and I should have been a dick and just like been out the $16 or whatever. Because he's like, I'll give you the passphrase, but I want you to remove the negative feedback. And I was just like, whatever. I just want my bitcoins. And because he also said he would increase the amount that he would give me. He would give me more than what I actually paid for.
Did he?
He did. He upped it by a little bit. So,
well, at least there's that.
Right. So I got a little bit more. More of the story is, don't buy Bitcoins from eBay. It's not worth the headache. LocalBitcoins.com or Coinbase. And if you have Bitcoins, if you stop by SurvivalPunk.com, I do take them as tips, and I would appreciate your tips.
And speaking of tips, I think a good tip would be to visit our friends over at JM Bullion. See what they can do for you.
Right. JMBullion.com for all your online gold and silver needs at the best prices, family owned and operated. And then if you listen later on when I talk about your financial needs for prepping 101, and I will discuss why silver and gold are such an important part of your preps, and you should have them in there. So JMBullion.com, stop by SurvivalPunk.com and click on their link in the margin. All right, up next we've got a new story called, it's from postindependent.com, and it's Opinion True Survivors. Sometimes when I do these news stories, I don't actually read the news article until I present it on air here.
I think people can tell.
Well, because I'm learning at the same time that I'm talking to people.
I know.
This one I actually read and was really interested in, because a lot of the things in this article, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. You can go to their website and read it. It talks about...
You mean you actually did prep work for the Preppers article?
Yes.
Awesome.
So, it talks about a few people that were left to their own devices and had to actually survive for decades.
Decades?
Yeah, there's... Let's see. Hiro Onda died of 91 this past January. He was the most famous Japanese holdout from World War II, surviving for 29 years in the jungle on Lebang Island in the Philippines, unknowing that the war had ended. He and his three comrades continued guerrilla operations over the years, raiding and killing some 30 Filipino natives they considered the enemy.
Oh, Lord. For 30 years?
Right. His comrades died. And Onda was left alone until 1974 when a Japanese student found him and told him it was time to give it up. Hold on. He refused to come out until he heard orders from his former commanding officer, who flew to the island and relieved him.
Wow, that is dedication.
Right.
And a half.
Right. So,
those poor Filipinos, though.
Right. Onda and Yukio. Yukio was another guy that was left out there. Homes for all those years were trench caves dug into the jungle floor, barely large enough to sleep in, and huts made from bamboo poles and coconut leaves. Both survived largely on basic primate diet: bananas, mangoes, coconuts, nuts, crabs, prawns, eels, snails, and trapped rats, and pigeons. The occasional wild hog or cow shot with their Arisaka bolt rifles. They used pounded bark from the pago tree or fibers from a hemp-like weed to make clothes. Both used palm fiber toothbrushes and boiled all their drinking water, using flashlight lenses to start fires. However, having never experienced McDonald's or Dunkin' Donuts, both were declared perfectly healthy by physicians after discovery. Incredibly, Onoda had no dental cavities. Which,
wow.
Basically, he eats the way that I strive to on the paleo diet.
That is completely paleo, right?
Right, there. Right. I mean, when you're stuck in a survival situation like that, I mean, I've heard other people in the survival community saying that, you know, like, a paleo primal diet is not sustainable. That's what we sustained on for like 10,000 years. I mean, this guy lived for 30 years in the jungle on that diet, basically.
Now, what's this part down here?
This is another. I've read...
This looks interesting right here, but even more astonishing is the case of a Russian nuclear family that did not even know World War II had begun until they were discovered living in a remote valley of the Siberian Taiga, mountainous forest, by a team of airborne Soviet geologists in 1978. For 42 years, they had no contact with civilization, the nearest small town being 150 miles distant. The parents, Karp and Akulina Lykov, were old believers, a fundamentalist Orthodox Christian sect that had been persecuted since the days of Peter the Great. After Stalin came to power, it got worse. Karp's brother was shot by an NVKD patrol, and he fled into the forest with his wife and two children, aged 9 and 2, in 1936. They carried a crude spinning wheel and loom, axe, saw, copper kettles, plates, and little else. Pushing deeper into the taiga, they finally built a large log cabin and on a terraced garden on a hillside. The growing season was short, but the forest provided plenty of water, berries, pine nuts, and firewood for frigid winters. They wove and patched clothing from hemp and made galoshes and buckets from birch bark. Their staple was potato patties mixed with ground rye and hemp seeds. So they weren't exactly Atkins friendly. With no firearms, they eventually learned to trap animals for their hides, fur, and meat, and drive off bears by banging pots. Two more children were born, and the youngest son, Dimitri, would chase young elk into the deep snow until they were exhausted, finish them off with a knife, and carry the carcass back across his shoulders. Yet their kettles eventually rusted, and they lived on the edge of famine. In the 1950s, Akalina starved herself to death to feed her children. Wow.
Yeah, this is not the first time I've heard about this family. And
it is the first time for me.
I read a massive article documentary on them one time. It was amazing. Like, there were some, like, real survival lessons to learn from these people. I mean, they survived. Like, there was a terrible, like, I think they call it the terrible, like, bark winter, where they had no food and they ate tree bark for a whole winter.
I didn't even know that was possible.
It's not going to be happy. You can kind of digest it, and it'll kind of... Because a lot of trees have some nutrients. Like, there's 5 different parts on a pine tree you can eat, and actually live fairly well. The inner bark is one of them. But you're not going to be living real happy.
No, I can imagine.
Later on in this article, like, they mentioned, I think, the worst part about about it was living for, like, 30 years without salt. I mean, you can get salt from certain things in nature, but you're not going to make things palatable. Like they said, they ate a what was it? What animal? Elk?
Yeah, elk.
An elk? Animal blood has salt in it. So if you drink the animal blood, you can get your minimum amount of salt that you need to live that way. But yeah, you have to drink the animal's blood.
You have to go full vampire there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, traditionally, like, and I'm trying to get into, like, it's called nose-to-snout eating, where you consume the entire animal, because a lot of those organ meats and stuff have a lot of things that you need in them. And I tried to eat some beef liver, and I fed it to the cats.
I imagine it had a very earthy taste to it.
It was a texture. I didn't like the texture.
Yeah, I've tried liver myself. It's kind of squishy and spongy. I actually tried it in a Mexican restaurant. I tried some kind of a Mexican liver dish.
I put salsa on mine to try to make it palatable.
Did not agree with me. It tasted like I was eating, like, chewy battery acid soaked something or other.
So I will eventually find a beef liver recipe that is edible. But the moral of the story here is, you know, a lot of times us in the prepper survival community get hooked up on all of our gadgets and doodads. And these people really had nothing. Right. And they had next to nothing. And the human spirit allowed them to survive. For decades.
But, you know, you bringing up that whole the bark thing in the winter and all that stuff. You know, that is probably a great reason of why preppers actually like to garden.
Yes. Which brings us into our next article. It is on sustainablog.org. And it is titled, Why Preppers Garden... Different reasons for growing your own food.
Being completely self-sustainable, that is like the goal of many preppers out there, especially for people wanting to live off the grid.
Right. So, it's apparently by a non-prepper, garden sustainable, probably a hippie, but I like a lot of hippies. And jumping into the bullet points of this article are, consider every bite of food you grow for your family to be an act of rebellion. Number one, if you live in the suburbs, plant every square inch of your yard. That's not the ones I was looking for.
Well, let me see here. Do, 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 do. This will probably be edited out.
If you be quiet, I can see the edit point easier.
My bad.
Yep. Growing your own food wields many weapons. You are preserving your intelligence by refusing to ingest toxic ingredients. Many of these ingredients and use of pesticides sprayed on them have been proven to lop off IQ points.
Huh?
You are nourishing your body by feeding yourself real food. Real food, unpasteurized and unirradiated with all the nutrients intact, will provide you with a strong immune system and lower your risk of many chronic diseases. As well, you won't be eating the toxic additives that affect your body detrimentally.
You are not participating in funding big food, big agri, and big pharma when you grow your own food. Every bite of food that is not purchased via the grocery store is representative of money that does not go into the pockets of these companies who are interested only in their bottom lines. Those industries would be delighted if everyone was completely reliant on them. And you are not susceptible to the control mechanisms and threats. If you are able to provide for yourself, you need give no quarter to those who hold the specter of hunger over your head. You don't have to rely on anyone else to feed your family.
And that, those touch on a lot of points that are very important to me. I try to limit the amount of toxic gick that I'm ingesting. You know, I have my cheat day, once a month, you know, and I don't always buy organic produce. I don't always have the money for it. I make decisions and choose what I can when I can. And I don't have room right now to plant a garden.
Right.
I do it in the past. I've done like...
Even though I have seen you try in what that little piece of crap you call your yard.
Right. I have grown like, you know, good little crops for it in like the dirt outside my window until...
Yeah, you grew tomatoes.
Yeah, tomatoes. And I grew zucchinis and some peppers and some other... So I've grown stuff in the tiny like foot of space I have out my window until my garden beds were like pulled out one summer.
Your garden beds got pulled out.
Yeah, my garden beds got pulled out.
Who pulled your garden beds?
Someone with the apartment complex.
Somebody just pulled out your garden beds?
Yeah.
What a jackass.
Yeah, they pulled out my garden beds and put down mulch, not even covering the entire spot. And So, yeah, I just gave up on that.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
But the growing your own food and supplementing that, that's a big thing I want to get into as soon as I can get out of the apartment. That goes right along with being debt-free. If you can supplement your food by any portion, that's another, you know, little tiny bit that you're not a slave to the machine.
You should just build a tiny house and park it out here somewhere.
I've thought about that. When my car is paid off, I plan on buying land and living on that land and then building my tiny house and quitting my job and only doing Survival Punk podcast.
You should.
And the Ramblings podcast.
That is good. Oh, wait, our first shout-out on survivalpunk.com. Oh, thank you, Jeebus. Alrighty now, I think it's time we move on to our survival gadget of the week. And I think we'd like to talk about something that we're both familiar with. It's something we tried out a few months back and ended up being a lot more...
Durable, sturdy,
exactly, than I thought it was going to be. Something called the Silver Cloud Survival Shelter.
Right. So, I was, probably last year or so, during the summer, I was messaged by the creator of the Silver Cloud Survival Shelter on Facebook, about his product. And, you know, I hit him up. I was like, you want to put your money where your mouth is and send me out one to test and review for the website? And he kind of went over, like, he'd sent out a bunch of them for people for review, and he hadn't got any reviews back in. Because when he messaged me, I looked up his product, I looked on YouTube to find video reviews, other blog websites. The only things I could find were his website, which he doesn't own the domain, and I kind of got him to him for that. It's like silversurvivalshelter.weebly.com or something.
Oh.
Which... You should always buy the .com of your brand because you own that brand. So anyway,
such as survivalpunk.com.
Exactly.
Not survivalpunk.tumblr.com.
Right. Although I am on Tumblr if you want to look me up on there.
Yeah, you sell out.
Yeah. So he sent one out, and I brought it out here to Mike's house, and we set it up and tested it, and it's basically like the Cody Lundin Super Shelter. You have a strong, very big Mylar, basically sort of tent with a clear plastic front part that will reflect and hold in your heat.
Right, you build your fire on the outside of the clear part.
Right.
That way, all that heat comes through that sheet, bounces back off that Mylar straight at you, and builds kind of a heat pocket right there.
Right.
Now, in the very first episode of Dual Survival, Cody Lundin built kind of a rudimentary version of this with just one of those big thermal blankets.
Right.
Basically a big sheet of Mylar, and found plastic.
Right.
And, I mean, this is basically a ready-made version of that.
Right. For, like, cheap, like, $7 to $12, I think you can get them off of Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I left one out here, and it stayed up for a few months before probably Wild Animals ripped it to shreds.
Between Wild Animals and the weather, after about 3 months, it finally got taken. It finally got ripped up.
Right. And that's, if I had built it,
And this isn't exactly calm weather territory. The weather out here can be quite insane. High winds.
Right.
Lots and lots of rain. I mean, occasional sleet and everything. And this thing just lasted.
Right. And I just put it up with bank line. Had I built a lean-to type frame with it, I think it would still be standing, you know, like a wooden.
It probably would be.
I think it'd still be standing. I keep an extra one basically in my bug out bag as an emergency shelter. It weighs a couple ounces.
See, and I had no idea that they were this inexpensive, or I'd have one in my bug out bag right now.
Yeah, I mean, for just a couple bucks, I don't even see why anyone would not have it. Store.
I mean, and it folds up. I mean, when you first get it, the package, you can hold the whole thing in your hand. It does not take up much space at all.
Okay. Actually, right here, Silver Clad Survival Shelter with free shipping, $15.95, free shipping.
They also have a deal for a 12-pack, it looks like. For a 12-pack of these things, price includes $96 for 12 shelters and $16.95 shipping and handling for just $112.95. And that is not bad.
If you're a reseller or something, that would be a good idea.
Or if you're trying to survive with a football team.
Right. I may talk to my friends at Survival Gear Bag and see if they want to carry this item.
That would be a great item for. Yeah. I mean, you can't go wrong with that. As inexpensive as it is, I mean, that's just something that any good prepper, survivalist out there should, you know, keep handy. I mean, they get out full of.
I mean, you should have an emergency space blanket in there anyway. This way, you've got a shelter. I mean,
now that I do have in there, I already have one of those. But okay. Well, you want to go ahead and talk about? It's time for our next sponsor ad, I guess. Oh no, it's not.
No, it's not.
But since you already brought them up, want to tell people about Survival Gear Bags?
Sure. You can get all of your Kelly Jondo over at Survival Gear Bags. He has survival gear bags that you can buy. He also carries frog glue, which is my preferred method to clean your firearms. Good stuff. It really sucks in the pores. When I'm firing my AR pretty intensively, I could see the frog lube coming out the pores in the metal and keeping it wet and lubricated.
God, you're getting me hot.
So I love frog lube. I love Kelly and Survival Gear Bags. So stop over there and check out Kelly's store.
Check out Kelly's store. Okay, looks like it's time for Nutrition Corner this week. It looks like we got a double header going on. Now, what is this 14.1 that you're wanting to talk to our generous listeners about?
So last week on the podcast, I mentioned the release of the CrossFit.com Open, which I signed up for, and the first workout of the CrossFit Open, which was 14.1, which was 30 double unders and then 15 power cleans. So my score ended up being 62 for that event, and that puts me
62 out of a possible what?
62 out of, I believe, 200 over 200,000 contestants signed up for it, and I scored, I think, 6,000 out of the 200,000.
Wow!
I walked into the gym, or In CrossFit, we call gyms boxes. So I walked into the box that morning, never having done a double under. Double under is when you do a jump rope, yeah, and you jump high enough to do two spins of the rope at once.
Yeah, you were telling us about that last time.
Right. So I walked in, never having done a double under, and never having done a double under.
Ooh, pause button.
You just now figured out this thing is a pause button?
Okay, so I walked into the box that morning, never having done double unders, and I got there a little bit early so I could practice them, when I found out that single unders would not be accepted in the score. So I had to do double unders for my score to be submitted. And I practiced, and they pretty much murdered me.
I can imagine.
I had a hard time doing double unders. I managed to get out 32, I think.
32 double unders?
Yeah, I think I got, because I got the first round, and then I did the 15 power cleans, and then I got two more double unders. They were not pretty double unders. They were horrible. It was like the Hulk trying to jump rope. It was like James Smash.
The Hulk could do really good at jump roping. He can jump like miles at a time.
Right.
He could do it.
Right. It was me jumping up as high as I could with my knees off the ground and then spinning the rope and then slamming back into the ground.
I would have paid money to see that.
It was horrible. And the coach is like, James, you need a little bit of finesse. And I was like, no, Nick, I need to get some double unders down. So.
Finesse.
Right. And the double unders are real hard. That's why, like, if you look at the leaderboard on CrossFitGames.com, a lot of people got stumped in the double unders. There's like probably the last 100,000 people only got one double under in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was there a minimum that you needed for the double under?
No, I mean, it's whatever your score happens to be.
Just whatever. Okay.
Right, yeah. So the top person that won, Dan Bailey, I think got 10 rounds in. So 30 double unders, 15 power cleans. 30 double unders, 15, and 10 minutes.
Good God.
There's a 10-minute time cap on
That's
it.
That's not human.
Dan Bailey is a beast. So, but yeah, 14.1 smashed me, but I knew when I signed up for the CrossFit Open that I was not going to be a top competitor. But, to me, 6,000 place out of 200,000, that's not too terrible.
No, not too terrible at all.
Yeah.
All right, now what's this Tough Mudder thing you had me
More stupidness for me.
More stupidness.
So, Tough Mudder, I'm signing up for it here. It'll be in Nashville, I think, in June or so. Tough Mudder is an endurance race contest. It's 11-mile run with obstacles like climbing through mud, jumping over walls, and then through flames and stuff.
Through flames?
Yes, there's like flame pits. I think at one point there's like a field of like power cables through that you have to like go through a field of power cables.
Are these live cables?
Yes, but it's not a huge shock. It's more like a tiny like taser pop. But the thing is, you're supposed to like go through and let them touch you like one at a time. If you run through, you get a pop from like 10 of them at a time.
Oh, good.
So you have to kind of walk through and like, you know, twist and turn and not get hit. Which I like being shocked, so it probably wouldn't bother me that much.
Oh, yeah.
But
I've seen you electrocuted before.
Yeah, 11 miles is kind of brutal. But I've read, it's not as bad because the obstacles break it up. Kind of like that Wipeout show and stuff you see in Japan, like the obstacle courses and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like that. So I'm interested. I signed up with my CrossFit gym. I think the owner and one of the other guys there, Steve, I think we're going to do it as a team. They're much fitter than I. I'm just stupid and like being beat up on an events like this.
Well, you probably deserve it.
And I got a couple months, so I'm probably good to get a little bit faster.
Awesome. Awesome.
So that's it for Nutrition Corner this week.
All right, and looks like it's time for Mike's Survival Movie Pick of the Week. And
what do you got for us this week?
Well, as I've done before, I like to go a little bit unorthodox. I'm going to pick another one that nobody's going to see coming, and that you even questioned when we talked about it earlier. My survival movie pick of the week is a comedy from the 90s called Down Periscope, starring Kelsey Grammer, who most people would know as Frasier from both Cheers and the show.
Right.
Frasier. No, Down Periscope is basically about a man who's on the verge of pretty much, he's either going to get promoted to getting his own nuclear sub, he's a Navy officer,
right,
or he's going to wind up surfing a desk for the rest of his Navy career. I mean, so basically what they do, they challenge him into a series of war games where he is going to be commanding a diesel sub, a decommissioned diesel sub left over from Korea, basically.
Right.
Now, the reason this is a survival movie, the whole point of it, him and his ragtag group of misfits that are assigned to him, basically against his will, that end up working perfectly in his favor, have two goals to accomplish. They've got to simulate attacks on two different places. And they have to survive long enough to do this against the entire nuclear Navy. Every nuclear sub they have, the frigates, the destroyers, airplanes with sonar, and they basically survive all this by becoming essentially invisible, one way or the other.
Right.
They, in a pinch, basically bottom the sub on the floor of the ocean, that way the sonar can't pick it up. They make whale noises, so they just think it's a couple of whales down there. They go right between the propellers of a gigantic tanker ship,
right,
to mask themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're surviving all the way through. And I know it's a stretch out there for you people, but they are surviving the best they know how. And when it all boils down to it, they win. Spoilers. Yeah, I know the movie's 20 years old, but who cares? But that is my survival movie pick of the week.
I do remember that movie. It was an entertaining one.
Yes,
I especially liked when they swapped the uniform of the female officer with one that was many sizes too small and threatened her almost being out of uniform.
Yeah, that's actually another element of survival in the movie I didn't even think about. She was one woman on a submarine full of horny men.
Right, right. So, speaking of Navy uniforms, my ex, Ariana, who I believe is a listener of the podcast, also looks great in her Navy uniform. Hi, Ariana.
And hello to you too, Crystal. Okay, now moving on to our continuing series, Prepping 101. This week we're going to be, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but we're going to be talking about savings this week.
So, savings aren't exactly the most romanticized, cool thing in the prepper survivalist world. Everyone wants their tricked out ARs, everyone wants their pallets of MREs and whatnot. And savings are probably one of the most important items. Savings, barter material, precious metals are some of the most important facets of the survival prepping world that cannot be overlooked. When I got into the survival prepping world, 5 years ago or so, something like that, I had a savings account of nothing. I had no money saved up. Paycheck to paycheck, no savings, blew every penny I got. If anything happened, car broke down, something happened, I was pretty much screwed.
Just one catastrophe away from just total...
Right, which, I mean, happened often. Like, it's like my truck actually broke down.
I forgot about you having a truck.
Yeah, my truck broke down. That's why I'm in debt now with the car, because I went out to get a car. So since then, I've built up a $2,000 emergency fund that will get me through. $2,000 get you through a lot of emergencies.
Now, I like what you did. One thing that my co-host James did to make sure that he did save money, he set up a bank account, not in a big branch chain bank system like your U.S. banks or your Bank of America's or anything like that. He found some little podunk small-town bank with no other branches several cities over and opened up a savings account there, virtually making his money damn near inaccessible. To touch that money, he would have to drive for pretty good distance out of his way of everything, just to get at that money.
Right. I declined debit cards, online banking, everything. I have to go talk to the pretty tellers to get money.
See, and now that is true savings, because you know your weaknesses. Yeah. I mean, it's good to know a person's weaknesses and their limits. I mean,
I'm actually going to have to go find another bank because that bank was bought out. And there are now banks close to me. Like, I actually found out there is one of those branches now next to my workplace.
Oh, making your money more accessible.
Making my money more accessible.
Well, don't you want to, I mean, wouldn't you just want to leave it there? See, I mean, a test of your wills at this point. I mean, you've done really good so far. Why don't you just forget it exists?
I've been there. I have to get money out. I've had some emergencies, which is why it's there.
You sad son, son of a bitch.
So, but yeah, savings account is number one. You gotta have savings. I don't care how poor, how broke you are. There's some money you can be saving, and you need to be saving it. $2,000 to me is a good spot. I feel pretty safe with my $2,000 emergency fund.
Mm-hmm.
I usually keep some cash laying around, some cash in my bug out bags, go bags. Hidden in various places, just to have cash on hand, some change.
Now, one tip that I can give anybody as far as saving money goes, now, a lot of people, they might have direct deposits, or they might, you know, still get a paper check at the end of their work week, and deposit the whole thing, and then basically just walk around with their debit card. Well, that is very, very dangerous, as I have found out in the past the hard way. One of the easiest ways to save money, if you have a debit card, cut the damn thing up. When you go and deposit your paycheck, or when your paycheck first gets deposited, leave all the money that you're going to need for your bills, plus some extra, and then just withdraw so much money. Like, just withdraw, like, say you only get paid every 2 weeks, withdraw like $200 to $300. And make yourself live off that. You will find yourself scrimping. You will find yourself cutting corners. You will find yourself saving to make that cash last to your next paycheck. I mean,
that's a good tip. It's one that I need to implement more. My work only does pay us in direct deposit. And
as does mine.
Right. And I've tried to do things in the past, and I just have a hard time sticking to a lot of stuff. Like, I've tried the envelope system before, mm-hmm. which works good until stuff happens, and then it doesn't work anymore.
Right.
So, I don't have a lot of discipline when it comes to that.
Now, another thing that I believe it or not, and this one's going to sound childish, each week when you get your paycheck, or every 2 weeks when you get your paycheck, take out $10 to $20 per week. Like, you get paid take out $20 a week. Hardly anybody's going to miss $20.
Right.
Get yourself a frickin' piggy bank or a mason jar or anything and just stuff that money. I prefer a piggy bank because you can't see what's inside it.
Right.
Out of sight, out of mind. Stuff the money in there. You will eventually forget it exists. And what happens? Eventually, somewhere down the road, something happens. You need your car worked on or whatever. Boom. You've got all this money that you forgot that you even had because you just squirreled it away.
Right. So that's good. I think we've got savings pretty well covered. You need to have savings.
Oh, definitely.
And savings in many different ways. I've got my savings account, which is where my main emergency fund is located. I keep cash around my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, it was $1,000 emergency cash in my apartment, hidden somewhere. I had it for emergencies. But I had it for a planned emergency, and now it's... Actually, I was thinking about it earlier. I was like, I need to check and see if I have any money left in there, because I forgot it was there and haven't looked.
Oh.
But I think I did. I think I paid for whatever it was in there, and I need to restock that. I've got my money diversified so that I have multiple savings accounts with my money going to multiple places for stored. Cash is a big one. I like to keep some cash on me. I've had times when, like, debit card readers or whatever's down, it's good to have cash on you.
Right.
It's good to occasionally have change on you for, like, vending machines if you need to. So, gotta have savings, gotta have it diversified in different ways around. Up next, I'm gonna say silver and precious metals. I think they need to be a part of your savings plan as well.
Now, silver and gold, those are always a good investment.
Right. I've been investing in silver for 5 years now or so.
Now, one good thing you had taught me about silver coins, because a lot of times you'll get these silver coins and they'll be worth various denominations depending on, you know, how they were printed.
Right.
But even if that, okay, like say you have a silver coin, a $20 silver coin or whatever from some country, I don't know.
Right.
And say that country, a coup hits or whatever, the money gets completely devalued. Guess what? That coin is still worth its weight in silver.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. An interesting thing. I'm not going to look up the stats. I'm just going to quote it on the wing here. So in 1964, when United States currency was still minted in silver, so quarters were like 9% silver, dimes were 9% silver. So back in 1964, you could buy a gallon of gas for a quarter. Or was it? Yeah, it was a gallon of gas for like a quarter.
It's enough to make you invent a time machine.
Right. So if you took the value in silver of that quarter in 1964, it comes out to about $3.50 right now. $3.50 will buy you a gallon of gas pretty much anywhere in the United States.
Never thought about that, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it kind of gives you a real thought on like inflation and the silver prices. So, yeah, I mean, basically, silver has stood the hedge against inflation, remaining the constant value, whereas the American dollar has declined a lot.
Right.
So that's, I mean, as a hedge against inflation is another big reason why I invest in silver. Barter during a collapsed economy. Yeah, in the initial stages of a collapse, no one's going to take your damn silver. I can't eat your silver dime. Screw you. I'm not eating. I don't want it.
Right.
In the initial stages of the chaos and stuff, yeah, you're probably going to want to barter with something else. But economies and society always rebuilds itself. And silver has always been used for exchange of value. So having that, it's not going to blow up. You're not going to become rich by hoarding a couple dimes. But it could get you, you know, some food to eat.
Right.
So, and it's not a big investment. Right now, I think silver might be around the $20 mark to buy an ounce. So getting an ounce, a couple ounces of silver, buying some dimes. You know, it's just, it's an extra part of your savings that you need to be looking at. And if all else fails, just go sell it. You'll probably make a profit.
Okay.
So that covers savings and precious metals. You can get your precious metals from jmbullion.com.
One more shout out to our favorite sponsor. Nah, not our favorite sponsor, but our first.
Right. So that's, I think that about covers your savings. Like a last aspect to the savings is also saving up barter stuff. Things that you might want to buy extras of to be able to trade during a collapse of some sort. Things like this was ball canning jars are pretty big, canning lids, 22 long rifle bullets of common calibers will be a good thing to trade. Alcohol, tobacco, cigarettes.
There's always going to be somebody out there that wants alcohol, tobacco.
Well, even like in times of stress, those things will go through the roof. Like, you know, there's been times when like people will have to like deal with a disaster, you know, down tree lines and stuff, and it's like money isn't really worth much to your neighbor, but if you give him, you know, a case of beer, yeah, I'll use my chainsaw and cut your driveway out.
Yep.
So those things hold a high regard. So, you know, maybe you want to stock, you know, a couple bottles of vodka in your fridge. They'll last forever.
I mean, think about this. Back when the country went through Prohibition,
they
outlawed alcohol, people were getting their alcohol any way they could.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even drinking wood grain alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point where the government was deliberately, and you can look this up, this is 100% fact, the government was deliberately poisoning the wood grain alcohol to try to discourage people from drinking it. Guess what happened? Over 10,000 wood grain alcohol poisoning related deaths because of that.
Yeah.
Because people would not put the bottle down.
Right.
So alcohol is always going to have some bartering value.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you might want to invest in some barter stuff. I don't keep a lot of it around because I do have a very small apartment.
And tobacco, cigarettes, anybody who's ever seen a prison movie knows how valuable those
right.
can be.
Right. The shelf life on, like, cartons of cigarettes will be pretty small, but maybe, like, tobacco...
People will smoke stale ones if they can, if right. they have to.
I've never smoked, so I don't understand it, but yeah, I've...
You used to imagine. Smoke after sex.
So, yeah, make sure you have some good barter stuff laying around. Savings, silver, and then barter. And that's going to wrap it up for this week's Prepping 101 Financial Series. Mike, what do you got for us?
Well, it's time for me to invite my yet another survival celebrity onto our show. And this week I would like to extend an invitation to a man whose wife has already gotten an invitation from me before. This goes out to Mr. Michael Hawk. Mr. Michael Hawk, he's most people know him from from various survival things, mostly though from Man, Woman, Wild, which is mine and my wife's favorite survival show whenever we can catch it. Is that show still in production?
I don't believe it is. I haven't seen anything on it recently.
Oh, that's a shame. But it was, I mean, it was one of mine. But Michael Hawk, if you're out there listening, you have an open-ended, open-door invitation to come on Survival Punk Podcast. Okay, and I think now it's time to talk about Black River Outpost and the spring sale that they've currently got going on.
Right. I saw earlier that my friends over at Black River Outpost are running a spring sale. Which I promptly shared on the Survivalpunk Facebook page. Along with my contest is going on there, the latest survivalpunk.com. Send your entries to james@survivalpunk.com and get a free NRA membership if you win. So just going through some of the items they have here on sale at Black River Outpost. What looks good? Motorola Talkabout, 27 mile. Normally $64.95 for these walkie-talkies, on sale for $57.95. Midland Radio, FRS, GMRS, Basecamp, normally $79.95.
Knocking $10 off that at $69.95.
Right.
And let's see, how about the K-Bar 14-inch grass machete? Normally a $49.95. They knocked about $5 off that. It's currently on sale for $44.95. So,
yeah, they've got some pretty good deals going on here. Stop by blackriveroutpost.com and check them out.
Alrighty then. Well, I think that's about all the time that we've got for this whole week's episode of Survival Punk. It has been great getting back together with you. All of our loyal fans out there, thank you for tuning in one more time. For Survival Punk Podcast, I'm Mike.
And I'm James.
And just remember, at the end of the day, when you've given it your all and you've tried your best... There is no shame in sitting on your barbell.